Ah, there we go. Now I can speak. All right. Hello, everybody. Thanks to Joan and Chris and Halsey and everyone at White Whale. To be part of this series is a dream come true, especially on such a stacked lineup. So I got 9 poems for you tonight, some from my book, The Red Glass Cat, some new. For those of you unfamiliar with my work, that gives you 4 poems to figure out if you like me. And if you don't, we're already in the 5th poem and your ordeal is more than half over. So good to go. All right. This first one is called St. John Minadeo, and it's the story about how one of Pittsburgh's elementary schools got its name. Whenever I see a crossing guard's bright yellow raincoat, I think of St. John Minadeo. The car, brakes failed, rolling out of control down Hazelwood Avenue. The driver honking, flailing one arm out the window. John pushing the last classmate out of the way, a split second before martyrdom. This next poem is called At the Moment He Was Conceived. It's a true story, sort of, and it came to me in a dream. At the moment he was conceived, his father, who had paused at the Franciscan seminary, emptied himself after swimming in a sea of sheets and skin, saw his reflection in his wife's pupils. One could only hope the moment was not ruined, contemplating divine judgment over choosing the wrong kind of biblical ecstasy. The boy, whose only memory of his father was set in a cancer ward, told me stories of an evil stepfather and the 1,000 invisible daggers passed around the dinner table. The boy, years later, at the boy's wedding, his mother told me the story of the time he called on a landline from the very same college campus that separated them decades prior. His voice was so much like his father's, she momentarily forgot what era it was and who she was talking to. At that moment, in my mind, I heard the sound of a branch breaking. This is one of my COVID poems. It's called Schema. After the toilet paper was hoarded and the hand sanitizer gone, they lined up maskless in the courthouse lobby for concealed carry permits. That's around when they sent the bombers to fly over the hospitals so that millions of dollars of jet fuel exhaust could bless our healthcare warriors with taxpayer pennies from heaven not squandered on ventilators. I forget when care became an act of war. Pretty sure it was before pizza delivery became essential and the decision that there was no reasonable way to cancel football. Because in a crisis, we can only do what we know. This next one is called Arriving in Westmont. It's a Johnstown poem, and you'll be able to buy this or read this in an anthology that's coming out in 2025, which is a long time to still be alive, I think, in these days. It's called Arriving in Westmont. My grandparents always wanted to move up here, become hilltoppers, a nickname to show the mill rats below who won't be drowning in the next flood. But for the looming fear of seasonal layoffs, the closest my grandparents ever got were graves in Grandview that I could never find on my own. Settling for a West End duplex, he worked first shift, waiting for the bus before dawn, losing his hearing in a shower of sparks. My grandmother got bit by a rat at the bakery where she worked. I lost the socialist campaign buttons I found in their attic. On my way to pick up a dinner that to them, a wedding feast for me is boring Saturday night takeout. My uncalloused hands sign away what would have been a week's wages after the tip. I've worked hard to get here, but never at the mouth of a blast furnace. I was born during the last great flood, a long distance call from my mother as she was going into labor, followed by catastrophe. A local call 3 weeks later, a ham radio operator from Perth Amboy, New Jersey, speaking to someone in Morrellville, claiming he was a friend of my grandfather who wanted to know if I was a girl or a boy. His health failing, they had to bring his first grandson as soon as I was ready to travel. When my parents called from the opposite end of the turnpike, he turned his chair around with his back to the television. For 5 hours, he stared at the door. waiting until he could call until he could hold me for the first and last time. All right, this is a new one called The Gift. My first true moment of despair was in second grade when I fell into the toilet. I didn't realize the seat was up. This is when I learned what it meant to feel worthless as I sunk into the cold water. Later, watching 3-2-1 Contact, eating a TV dinner, they got into the death of the sun, and possessed by the image of the frozen sky falling on my little grave on an empty earth, I started screaming with a mouthful of mashed potatoes, inconsolable. I'm known for a cynicism that works its way into every conversational subject. Morbid fun facts about the gigantic penises demons are supposed to have, and how we could never see a quasar coming at the speed of light, turning us all into clouds of superheated gas. Ran into a former student the other day who still remembers the time I told her class about the liquefied remains of a corpse lost in air freight. I think the lesson was something about how to use a semicolon. But when you've lost sleep over the second law of thermodynamics, it's always time to have all the sex you can and get the fastest car. Enjoy every sandwich. They say I'm fun at parties, but I just want to help my friends by teaching them that it's okay to die. All right, this next one is called What It's Like to Lose a Parent to Fox News, and it goes out to anyone who can relate. Things were supposed to be different after sailing past the age your parents were when you first met them, different at least for the one that's still around. But an adulthood of mature hopes, dreams, and triumphs was not to be. Childhood forgotten, no confessions, no reflections. Phone calls from mom last about 10 minutes. Small talk about the weather and football before the big immigrant takeover and the Muslim communists that Biden put in charge of the government. 10 minutes before, sorry, Ma, I think there's somebody at the door. This next one is called Presidential History, and it hits harder if you do the math. On October 22nd, 1976, in the shadow of Nixon, was the final debate between Ford and Carter. And in the days before cable, when the president was on TV, the president was on every TV. How could this clash of titans inspire anything but a wave of joyless missionary sex? A contractual exchange in loveless marriages like the handing over of grocery money. I was born July 21st, 1977, in a hospital named after John F. Kennedy. Do the math. Anyway, all right. This is the penultimate poem. It's called The Secret City. There's a reference in here. So for those of you not in the know, there was a spot on the Allegheny Riverfront in pre-gentrified Lawrenceville called Certain Death. It's where punks had generator shows. Then the condos came. All right. Punk mass ends with a sign of peace between friends and a five passed across the merch table to help the touring bands find the shadows of Cleveland or Philadelphia. Out of the rock room with a cloud of secondhand smoke into cool, thick night air, the silence of Polish Hill, the ringing ocean of sounds found inside a car the seconds before it starts. This is the skyline of the secret city, whose citizenry are eager to trade sleep for a spectacle on a school night. On the ride home, shows pass into memory, on their way to legend. The tour tape on my front seat, permanent artifact of the intimacies of the scene, bands ripping holes in time on these breathless nights. Tomorrow, I'll be in a meeting to compose a strategic plan, trying to impress the administration and counting the hours to the next show, trying to relive what I just saw. The lights on a rain-wet Penn Avenue blink yellow as the thousands of slumbering domestic dramas of the East End float by, I push the gas a little harder on the way to my own domestic tranquility, Nell and Libby waiting warm in our bed. I will be greeted with a mumbled, "Did you have fun?" from Nell 4 hours before her alarm goes off, and a drowsy wag of Libby's tail. But for now, I'm burning with the streetlights in this clandestine night. There are, of course, other sights to be seen this late. That time I saw Fox crossing Forbes, street racers on the parkway, all-night diner carnivals, certain death skinny dippers, dreams and philosophies whispered on porches. And there are, of course, deeper secrets later nights, basement doors begging to be knocked on, scenes wilder, impenetrable. I could tell you more, but everybody's got to find their own way in past the gates. All right, the last poem, it's called Supermarket in Homestead, Pennsylvania. It's a poem about a poem I didn't write, but maybe it's because I grew as a person. Oh, what thoughts I have of you this afternoon, Allen Ginsberg, as I immerse myself into grumpy middle age and the waterfront Giant Eagle. It started in the parking lot, abnormally full for a weekday afternoon, when I remember with slight dread, it's the first Friday of the month. I was busted right at the front door by a food demo specialist hawking oranges. She gave me my first hit of a real blood orange, and a doorway opened to a deep and dark world of low acid with a hint of berry aftertaste. I was hooked for life right before she told me they were all out. And it continued. They changed the design of the plastic bags for the bread I buy, and the new layout. I used to know this store like the back of my hand, I grumble. So crowded. Where the hell are the vegetarian refried beans? The kind of coffee I like was discontinued too. I can't read the handwriting on my own list. Crisscrossing the aisles several times, a poem started to build in my mind. This store is a trough where misery feeds itself. Of course, to write this means humanity is a sty, and I'm just the prime porker. Then I noticed the woman next to me started to dance with her full cart to the Whitney Houston song cascading from above. Someone's grandmother, like my own, 20 years gone now, babushka and all, counts money in a white bank envelope. My cashier wears a union pin, reclaiming this ground from Frick's army of Pinkertons once again. The promises of payday and the New Deal realized. It can be so easy to forget about my place at the common table of the human family. And to do so is to ruin one of the greatest words in the English language, groceries. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you for putting up with me.